Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
New Scientist, 18th of August 2018, episode 2 of reading, and hopefully I'll be able to get through a fair amount of this magazine. Easter Island Society may not have collapsed into infighting. There's no author here, it's in brief. In Rapa Nui, people of Easter Island were thought to have experienced social collapse after the 17th century due to infighting over depleted resources, but a study of tools they used to carve their famous Moai statues adds evidence that they may have collaborated at this time. Remote Easter Island is in the southeastern Pacific Ocean. Once lush with palms, it was devoid of trees by 1500. Some scientists have suggested that erosion resulted and led to food shortages, while lack of wood limited boat building. They argue this could have led to violence and eventual collapse of the Rapa Nui Society. Dale Simpson of the University of Queensland in Australia says the evidence suggests otherwise. He and his colleagues trace the origins of the volcanic basalt chisels, picks and axolite tools used for making canoes, as well as Moai, the massive monoliths carved into human figures shown above. The team compared chemical elements in the basalt of 17 picks and tool fragments excavated near the statues with those found in the 31 largest quarries in the islands, and found a majority of tools matched the high quality basalts of in one quarry complex. Quote, this suggests there's communal use of stone, which is arguably facilitated by social, political and economic interaction between clans. Death, that seems that story. Death moves at 2 millimeters an hour. We have seen death travelling for the first time. It moves in a wave of 30 micrometers per minute, at least in an egg cell. Intercellular animals, cells often sacrifice themselves for the greater good, for example, to prevent cancer. Much of the cell's internal machinery self-destructs, then the whole cell disintegrates. It has been clear for a while that once this program's cell death begins, the signal travels rapidly within the cell, but no one had studied how it spreads. Now James Ferrell and Sai Chen of Stanford University in California have shown that rather than being spread by slowly diffusing chemical signals, death travels in a trigger wave, like a wildfire, with self-destruction in one part of the cell triggering the same in the next. They discovered this by filling a tube with a cytoplasm fluid in a cell from a frog egg. This held subcellular compartments seen as green dots in, thanks to glowing protein. They put one end of the tube in a dye extract of a cell that had undergone programmed death. As the compartment self-destructed, the green dots vanished, revealing the rate of death spread much faster than the dye diffused. Well, that's quite interesting. So that's the way that answered it. So they put the dye and they put the self-destruct. Okay. Nuclear, nature's answer to nuclear waste issue. The Earth's crust used to be full of radioactive uranium. In some spots, it underwent chain fission reactions, the process that gives us nuclear power today. Remnants of these natural nuclear reactors give us clues about how there's still radioactive waste. And my father researched this in the 70s. Okay. Evan Gupin of the US Naval Research Laboratory in Washington, D.C. and his colleagues used samples from one such site in Gavin, this is the same Gavin one, to find out whether the byproducts of fission escaped the site. One of the most dangerous is radioactive cesium-137, which causes major health problems if it gets into soil or water. The team found that some cesium-137 was trapped in the lattice structure of another element, ruthenium. Ruthenium might help keep our own reactors' waste contained. Yes, I find that a bit hard to digest. Inducing birth at 39 weeks cuts surgery. Choosing to induce labour at 39 weeks has been found to reduce the rates of emergency cesarean disease deliveries. Inducing labour had been thought to raise the C-section rate, but now a study of 6,100 women in the US, half of whom were induced at 39 weeks pregnancy, suggests it cuts the emergency C-section rate by 3 percentage points to 19% of deliveries. It also found that women who had inductions before and reported less labour pain and a greater sense of control over the birth. William Goldman of the Northwestern University in Chicago, who led the research, says women who deliver vaginally have fewer complications. Loosen up for better sperm. Man's choice of underwear really has an impact on his sperm. That's the finding of George Chavio and his colleagues at Harvard University. They asked 675 men to provide semen samples and answer a questionnaire about what type of underwear they wore most often in the previous 3 months. Men who wore boxer shorts had 25% higher sperm concentration, 70% higher total sperm count, and 33% more swimming sperm in a single ejaculate than men who wore other types of underwear. The team adjusted other factors that might have results, such as different in age, BMI, and smoking. But it's impossible to rule out all confounding factors. Sperm production is sensitive to temperature and needs conditions a few degrees lower than the inside of the abdomen. Previous studies have shown that tight underwear can push the testes closer to the abdomen and raise the temperature inside the scrotum. Although the differences he found are quite significant, Chavez says the men who wore tight underwear typically had sperm concentration within the normal range and wouldn't necessarily be expected to have difficulty conceiving children. Einstein was right about the speed of light again. If you are driving a car and the speed up to match the vehicle in front, it will appear to slow down relative to you. Albert Einstein said the same isn't true. When the photons are involved, they will always travel at a light speed even if you change your speed. The central tenet of Einstein's theory of special relativity, the speed of light does not change because of the speed of the observer, has now been proved precisely, more precisely than ever. Vahe Ghazardian and Arthur Margarian at the Alkane National Laboratory in Armenia used data from two experiments in the European Cyclotron Radiation Facility in France to look for signs of changing speed of light. First test measured the speed of a photon in a moving reference frame. A high-powered laser was fired, a beam of ultra-fast moving electron bouncing off into a detector that measured the speed of light from the electron's frame of reference. The second experiment was able to measure the light speed in a stationary frame of reference. For this, the particle called an eta meson decayed into two photons. The velocities of those two photons gave the speed of light as measured from the meton's frame of reference, which is not moving. Okay, so after an eta meson, it would be a meson, which is a quark and anti-quark. The velocities of those photons gave the speed of light as measured from the meson's frame of reference, which is not moving. Quote, both experiments are done very accurately, monitoring lots of systematic effects that potentially sources of uncertainty, says Gerzadan. The pair found that the two measured light speeds, if the two light speed are different, it's by a factor of less than a 7 trillionth. Newton's stars rear visible from front. The gravity of a dense neutron star is so powerful that it bends the light emitted from one side towards the opposite side of the star. In other words, the observer could see all of it at once. When the star is destroyed in a supernova, it can leave behind a neutron star, a ball the size of a city, and very dense. Hajime Soltani of the National Astronomical Observatory in Japan and his colleagues modeled the three neutron stars, each 10 kilometers in radius, one with a mass of two suns, one slightly more massive and one slightly less. They found the light from the least massive acted normally, but for the denser stars, photons from the back are whipped to the front by gravity. Photons emitted at right angles still travelled away from the star, but those leaving in any other directions will be bent around to the front. This gravitational lensing would distort light from our perspective, implying we'd see a different light signature from a denser neutron star. A circular hotspot in the star could look like an arc, for example. Dear. Invasive species, alien grasses fuel bigger US wildfires. Invasive species of grass are making wildfires in the US up to twice as large and three times as frequent. One species, cheatgrass, is now widespread in California and was involved in last year's Thomas Fire, the largest recorded in the state, until the Modico Complex Fire, now burning. Like cheatgrass, many invaders are finer than native species, so ignite more easily, and occupy space within the patches of native grass. Other invaders, such as silkweed, grow more than 3 meters high and can spread far into trees. Emily Fusco of the University of Massachusetts in Amherst presented preliminary results of her study last week in New Orleans at the annual meeting of the Ecological Study of America. She analyzed the impact of 9 widespread alien grasses in the U.S. they have invaded. Fusco combined this information with the ground and satellite fire records, comparing fire frequency and the size of infested habitats versus comparable uninvaded habitats. She found all invasive species except one made fires more frequently, and all but 2 made fires larger. Digital Family Planning by Penny Sarchet. Objections to birth control apps expose how little we understand contraception generally, says Penny Sarchet. Would you trust your smartphone to stop you getting pregnant? That might sound ridiculous, but the Food and Drug Administration has just approved an app called Natural Cycles as a form of contraception. This follows similar approval by the European Union last year, which saw the app garner an enthusiastic following of women eager to stop taking hormonal contraception, but also mounting controversy. I suppose the women weren't mounting controversy, but it seems simple. You measure your temperature and tap it into an app. The algorithm tells you there's a risk of conceiving that day. Avoid sex, use a condom on those red days, and you shouldn't get pregnant. Of course, things are more complicated than that. The first signs of this were the abortions. In January, it was reported that Stockholm South General Hospital in Sweden had identified 37 unwanted pregnancies among women using the app. These accounted for 5.5% of those seeking abortions there in the last 4 months in 2017. This prompted the Swedish Medical Products Agency to open an investigation into the app. Now it adverts are under fire. The UK Advertising Standards Authority announced last month that it's investigating the marketing by the Swedish firm behind the app after receiving 3 complaints about the app posts on Facebook. Complaints took issue with the app describing as a clinically tested alternative to birth control methods. News headlines and regretful testimonials seem unlikely to deter other tech firms from following the Natural Cycles into the contraception business. In May, Ava, a firm that makes fertility tracking bracelets and apps, noted that it raised $30 million to expand various aspects of female health. One of these is preventing pregnancy, and the firm is in discussions with the EU and US health agencies. It is easy to see the appeal of high-tech solutions. Many people only consider 2 kinds of contraceptive: combined pill, the combined pill, which isn't good for everyone due to hormone problems, and condoms, which are unpopular and relatively unreliable. In reality, more than 10 types of contraception are available, with combined pill and more permanent measures like sterilization, see graph below. True condoms, caps, diaphragms, and copper coils are the only non-permanent methods besides natural family planning that don't involve hormones. But many common perceptions about hormone contraception are myths. For example, some methods, like the combined pill, are unsuitable for women who are over 35 and smoke, because oestrogen raises the risk of dangerous blood clots, while contraceptive implants, coils, and prostaglandin-only pills are all safe with the risk, these risk factors. But there are other reasons why many prefer not to use hormones. Reported side effects across various messes include breast pain, headaches, changes in libido. And there is no question that hormones increase some side effects, and some women are much more susceptible than others, says Maureen Colino, the chief medical officer of ABBA. There are definitely hormone-sensitive women, and those women can suffer a lot under a birth control pill. Quote, I think unmet need among women is effective, non-hormonal, non-invasive contraceptive, says Roel Schwitzel, who co-founded Natural Cycles with his wife. Quote, this seems to be especially the case for couples looking to have children in a couple of years, but not quite yet. They want to discontinue hormone contraceptions, and they want to have something that bridges this time. Sexual education. This may be poorly served market, but the demand seems based on people misunderstanding the evidence on contraception. There's no reason to worry about taking hormones for too long, says Dina Mansour, a doctor expert in reproductive healthcare at Newcastle, UK. Other than the cervical cancer on the combined pill. Hormonal methods don't hamper future fertility either. There's no need to come off years before you want to start having a baby. At the same time, there seems to be a lack of understanding on how effective different methods of contraception are and how this is assessed. The only way to guarantee not getting pregnant is to abstain from sex. Even female sterilization has a tiny chance of failure. So it's no surprise that some natural cycle users are finding the apps fails. Last year, a peer-reviewed study of Binatural Studies of more than 22,000 of the users, most of whom were Swedish, calculated that when used perfectly over a year, one woman in 100 will get pregnant. However, the typical effectiveness is lower, with nearly 7 in 100 getting pregnant. The rates may sound high, but they are comparable with combined pill. If used perfectly, fewer than 1 in 100 women will get pregnant in a year. But under typical use, only 9 will. Out of 100 couples who use condom perfectly, 2 would be expected to get pregnant in a year, but this rises to 18 amongst typical users. Condoms slip down the rankings because many people often skip using them. In some respects, Natural Cycles seems to work best as an app to tell condom users when they really do need to take precautions. Natural Cycles basically reduce the number of days where you need to use a condom and informs users on particular days when not using a condom the risk will risk pregnancy, says Sherwills. This leads to better condom use, he says. Nevertheless, the most common reason why women using the app fail for pregnancy is still failing to use protection on the red day, he says. In other words, Natural Cycles may only work well if certain types of women, those with regular routines and disciplined personalities who rigidly adhere to rules, oh dear. It means that we're genetically selecting rule breakers. Women who use apps like this may be quite different from women who don't, says Mansour. It'd be useless because I'd never be able to remember to take my temperature every day or input into an app on a daily basis either. Furthermore, Natural Cycles studies only looked at women who had chosen to use the app, meaning there was a selection bias, says Crone. Other issues is that many women stop using the app during a study period. Quote, you can't just say, okay, they're gone and therefore they don't have to count them, they said. Okay. Of the 22,785 women analysed in the study, only 6,944 used the app for at least a full year. Of all the data collected, less than 10% qualified as perfect use. The sexual comment piece in BMJ, Sexual and Reproductive Health, criticised the firm's marketing for failing to mention that a few women use the app perfectly. I would say that this is really a method for disciplined couples, says Crone. But she does not believe contraception apps have a role to play for many women who are afraid of hormone pills or simply don't want to take them. Crone sees contraception apps as a trade-off, probably not effective as the pill for the average woman, but better for some women than using condoms all the time. Quote, it's what women are asking for, she says. Difficulty is, that is whether that can be communicated clearly, whether it's already so much confusion about contraceptive methods that have been in use for decades. According to Natural Cycles, the unwanted Stockholm pregnancies are in line with what you'd expect from its app. Schuetz says the outcry about the highlights, these highlights a broader knowledge gap in society about contraception and how it works. In some sense, I'm glad we're having this discussion now. Why the Natural Cycle apps works for me. Laura is a 31-year-old woman in Dublin, Ireland, who's used Natural Cycles for the past 10 months. I started using it after reading about the pill causing depression affecting mood. Quote, I had been taking the pill without break for 10 years, so I had never really known myself without being affected by the pill. I started to look for alternatives, but they were all invasive and contained hormones. And so I came across the Natural Cycles and I was intrigued. I much prefer it to the pill. If I forget to measure my temperature one morning and take my thermometer on a trip, the app takes that into account. But if you forget your pill for more than 2 or 3 days, you have an emergency. You have to use emergency contraception. It's also, you don't have to worry about vomiting and diarrhea negated with the pill the day I took. Quote, you have to take your temperature within the same few hours every day, but it's not a pain to remember you use the app when you have a regular work schedule. The only issue is at the weekend when you want to sleep in, but again, you don't need to measure every single day. It's just better if you do. On red days, when the app indicates your risk of pregnancy, we use condoms. I would like to start a family at some point, and I think Natural Cycles is a good way to become familiar with your cycle, and when you do want to start trying. I recommend the app all the time to friends and family. Once you explain how great it is to be in touch with your cycle, they seem to interest it, but a lot of people use the pill to regulate their periods to ease menstrual cramps. 21 minutes. Comment by Mark Strastro. Ready to level up. They may compete for the comfort of a chair, but video gamers are on track for Olympic stardom. What's the sport? That's a tricky question to ask. Back in 2018, Asian Games started in Indonesia. For the first time, competition will include video gamers alongside those of athletes, swimmers and weightlifters. Although it's a demonstration sport this time, the plan is to make eSports a full medal event in 2022 International Olympic Committee is considering the Summer Games. The impetus for acceptance is the growing eSports is having a bit of a moment in the West with pro leagues and TV coverage that seek to replicate the popularity of countries in South Korea and China. More and more people are finding that eSport can be thrilling and inspiring in the same way traditional sport can be. But is it actually sport? No, says opponents. Sport requires physical exertion. The counter-argument that playing eSports requires superb hand-eye coordination and motor skills and causes blood pressure and heart rate to rise. These respects, exertion is on par with long-standing Olympic sport of shooting. And even if it's primarily mental, it's still precedent for recognition. In Asia, at least, the Asian Games have previously included Go and chess and bridge to make a debut this year. It's easy to apply a drive-by cultural analysis to Western resistance to Asian embrace of esports. The Olympics are rooted in Western psyche as displays of physical honour the gods, while Asian cultures revere dedication and effort to excel on the top games display. But it's more complex than this. Asian enthusiasm is not universal. Japan's professional gaming scene lagged because of legal restrictions on prizes. And South Korea, which flourished in the late 90s with pro league sponsors and new TV contracts, enabled in partly by the government broadband push and the creation of an agency to promote esports. In addition, the relatively recent economic rise of South Korea and China means mass participation in the sport is relatively new. It's often said that modern sport as a participatory and spectator activity appeared in Britain as a result of the Industrial Revolution. Little wonder then that people in Asia found sporting heroes in the games that everyone had on their computers and in their pockets. Our opening question may soon be moot. Esports popularity is rising everywhere, and it's hard to resist. The success of the US and the UK of Overwatch League for professional players suggests the acceptance gap is more of a generation one than a philosophical one. In the end, perhaps the usual definition of sport will change. Maybe it will be economic if people will pay to play it, watch and sponsor it. It's a sport. Who says otherwise? Gluten-free dogs. Pets. 24 minutes. Pets deserve better than potentially risky fads, says Danny Zabe Chambers and Zoe Bridgeham. Despite overwhelming evidence of vaccines' efficacy and safety, the anti-vaccine lobby is growing. Raw and grain-fed diets based on unproven health claims are also gaining popularity. Fans of homeopathy continue to argue that the power of their treatments cannot be validated using traditional scientific methods. Familiar territory, you may think, but we're not discussing human health, where this is pets, dogs and cats. Recently, aggressive promotion of alternative therapies for animal diseases has become widespread. Closed Facebook groups, some with tens of thousands of members, discuss their mistrust of vets and the pharmaceutical industry. The latest manifestation of this is a backlash against the supposedly dangerous ingredients in commercially available dog and cat's food. Hence, these groups advising members to feed their pets raw meat, grain-free, organic, or even vegan diets. Although well-intentioned, these diets are not safe or nutritionally complete. Most recently, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration launched an investigation into a possible link between grain-free dog food and heart condition which called dilated cardiomyopathy. Many reports exist of pets and their owners being poisoned by bacteria in raw diets. For cats, meat-free diet is lethal if not supplemented with specific amino acids. Social media has undoubtedly had a role in the rise of alternative pet medicines and diets. Close Facebook groups enable echo chambers where strong yet poorly evidenced claims can go unchallenged, and those with a different view may be blocked. Countering this won't be easy, as simply presenting scientific facts can lead people with different views to become more polarised. It will have to be done with care. People, rightly or wrongly, feel free to ignore certain wisdoms when it comes to treating and feeding themselves. However, for pets, both owners and vets have an ethical and legal duty to act in each animal's best interest. We shouldn't accept the use of ineffective and dangerous practices for pets just to survive the belief of small but vocal fringe. Okay, really pushing myself here, 5-30 minutes. It's really hard. We can survive even extreme warming, by Michael Lepage. People tend to have one of two broad reactions to the bad news of climate: hopelessness and despair, or unjustified optimism. Neither reaction is right. We have seen this yet again in the response to the Hot House Earth study last week, which suggested that once Earth warms a certain amount, maybe just 2 degrees, a cascade of tipping points will keep warming even if our greenhouse emissions cease. The paper got massive coverage and terrifying headlines, which has led to a pushback from some climate scientists and campaigners worried about the impact of this kind of coverage. Quote, yes, the prospect of runaway climate change is terrifying, but this dead world is not our destiny. It's entirely avoidable, tweeted Eric Holthus, a former meteorologist and writer of the environmental website GRIST, G-R-I-S-T. The first thing to say is that the Hot House Earth paper was an opinion piece in a scientific journal rather than a new research. It's a possibility, but far from being mainstream view of climate scientists. But let's assume it's right, and the world keeps on warming and reaches 2 degrees above pre-industrial temperatures. If so, it's simply wrong to claim that we will start to avert major global warming. The world currently is on track to warm 3 or 4 degrees, even if we don't trigger a cascade of tipping points. Limiting warming to 2 degrees would require immediate and drastic policy changes, such as clamping down on flying and eating meat. That would have huge impact on our lifestyles. There's no sign of any single country yet being prepared to go that far, let alone enough countries to alter the world's course. This means we are setting in motion huge changes that cannot be stopped, such as the sea levels rising at least 5 metres. But it is also worrying, it's also wrong to go the other extreme and claim we are doomed. For starters, no scientists are claiming the hot half Earth will happen anytime soon. Many of the processes that could push the planet towards this state operate over centuries and millennia. And while estimates of sea level rise by 2100 are creeping up to as much as 3 metres, most all glaciologists think the melting of the polar ice sheets will take many centuries. This is mostly about what happens after 2100, not before. There is still some time to prepare and adapt then. And what we do is still matters even in the worst case scenario, because the more we do reduce emissions, the more time we have to buy ourselves. There's still one huge factor in our favour. The warmer the planet gets, the harder it is to warm it further. It will take twice as much carbon dioxide to warm the degrees from 1.5 to 3 degrees as it will to warm from pre-industrial to 1.5 degrees. We need to make the most of this time and get serious about adapting our cities and farms to warmer world. Among other things, that means thinking about where we build and what we build, from homes to cities to power stations. There is no doubt that climate change will be mostly bad. People are already dying after just 1 degree warming. Yet how bad it gets in the future depends on just how much the planet warms, but also on how much we do to adapt to life on a warming planet and rising sea levels with ever more extreme weather. Bad times are not the same as end times. More warming is inevitable. The end of civilization is not. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.